Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this very special week edition, the Masters Preview Edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Almeida. But as you know, and I said, this is Masters Week. We're all excited. We have to bring reinforcements, and who better than our friend and colleague, the European golf guru, Kieran Clark. I'm going to bring him first. Kieran, welcome again to the show. How are you today?
Well, thanks, Carlos. I'm very excited, like you are, for the Masters this week. It's going to be really intriguing, really exciting. The first major of the year. Obviously, all the hype we've had so far this year, building up to all these players at the top of the game, seemingly playing well and winning events left, right, and center. So there's so many top guys playing well going into Augusta, probably for the first time really since maybe 10 years ago or so. So it's a really, it's building up to be potentially a really exciting tournament. We'll have to wait and see how it all plays out, of course. But the thing for me is the majors still really matter. In this day and age of big money and whatever, the titles still matter. Being Masters champion is an emblem, something that still matters to this day. And you know, for me, even though I've had all these great events, all the WGCs and big PGA Tour events so far this year, the season doesn't really start until this week. And whoever wins the Masters is the guy that's going to carry on for the rest of the year as being potentially the man to beat. Who knows?
Who knows? Hey, Fred, welcome. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. As you guys know, I just come off 3 days at the Kiwa Island. Fantastic, fantastic resort. Really enjoyed it. Great golf there. But, guys, as you said, it's Masters Week. Plus, this is the third anniversary of hosting Back 9 Report. Thanks to all the listeners that tune in each week to listen to us ramble on about the great game of golf. Did I mention it's Masters Week? Let's go, Carlos.
Let's go. And before we go to what is going to be a massive wall-to-wall preview of the Masters, we have to go for the Weekend Backspin, where we will recap what happened in the major tours. And we're going to start with the first major on the season overall. And it was the first ladies major, and that was the A&A Inspiration, where Lydia Ko, wow, she clinched the first person, the youngest person, to win two majors on the LPGA. So, Fred, what happened there?
Yeah, on a course more suited for long hitters, Lydia Ko won her second consecutive major title. Also, her second consecutive win on the LPGA. But as you mentioned, it's her second major title before her 19th birthday. So she becomes the youngest to ever win two major titles, man or woman. Look out, Tiger. Lydia's going to break all of your records. Ko posted her second consecutive 69 on Sunday to best Inji Chun and Charlie Hall by one shot. Yes, I said Charlie Hall. We've been watching her for a couple years. She's creeping up on leaderboards, guys. She's going to be a factor. Arya Jutanagarn was only two shots back. She held the 54-hole lead but kind of fell back a little bit. And Lexi Thompson finished three back of Ko. She started out the front nine with a couple bogeys. Check out these ages, guys. Ko is 18. Chun is 21. Charlie Hall, 20. Jutanagarn, 20. And Lexi is only 21. Another talented teenager that we have been watching, Brooke Henderson, finished T10. That gives her four top 10 finishes in just six major championship starts. Every LPGA tournament thus far in 2016 has been won by a woman under the age of 23. On the opposite end of this age spectrum, Julie Inkster finished T36, 18 years difference between she and Ko. Ko, it's more than that. No, 36, no, it's more than that, 20-some years. Ko, Henderson, Jutanagarn, Hall, and Lexi, all the youngsters that we've been following for the last 3 years, and this looks like the group that will contend for titles in the foreseeable future. Lexi had the 54-hole lead, but two bogeys as I mentioned before, took her out of contention. Jutana Garnes' inexperience did show in the final round as she took a two-shot lead into the 16th hole, but bogeys on 16 and 17 allowed the steady Ko to pass her for the win. Tied to the lead standing on the 18th tee, Ko knew she had to birdie the last for the outright win. She stuck her third shot on the par 5 18th to 16 inches to set up the go-ahead birdie and finish at 12 under par. She said it might rank as one of her best shots of her career considering the circumstances, because she's had such a long career, you know, to choose from. Guys, this was a steady, get-her-done performance by Ko. She never seems to get rattled, never seems to get ahead of herself, and has the utmost confidence in what she's trying to do. She may not be the longest with the driver or the best iron player or even the best putter, but she leaves herself in positions to be successful in over 72 holes. That allows her to outperform the rest of the field. And if you believe in reincarnation, I think Ben Hogan has returned as a woman.
Wow, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. She's just that talented, and the sky's the limit with her. Kieran, how about a comment on that? And, hey, you're going to be talking about the win on the PGA Tour by Jim Herrmann, who clinched a golden ticket this week with his win at the Shell Houston Open. So how about those things?
Yeah, obviously, Lydia Ko, first of all, I can't really add to anything that Fred said there. You know, she's just astonishing, really, what she's achieved at this point in her career. I think what's most impressive about her is her serenity on the course. She's got the most incredible demeanor, almost the perfect mentality for golf at top level. And I think that somehow coolness and just calmness, she obviously must be nervous, but she gives no kind of indication of that. And she makes really good decisions all the time under pressure, which is obviously the hardest thing to do. And I think that's why she's able to outlast so many of these other players who are maybe bigger, stronger than her, often more experienced, but she has the mentality that overcomes that, and that's what separates her from everybody else right now. And it is, you know, really kind of the most underappreciated young sports star we have in the world right now, Lydia Ko. She's absolutely astonishing. On kind of the other end of the spectrum in terms of age and achievement is Jim Herrmann, as you said there, Carlos, who really is kind of the definitive journeyman pro, a guy who we haven't really heard much about of really at all. You know, one of those guys who he's there, lower ranked in the PGA Tour, but doesn't really do very much, doesn't threaten very often, and certainly not this year, where his form guy has been really poor all season, hasn't really done any better than narrowly making cuts. But at the Houston Open, where he came out of nowhere to lead that event, and he's 107th start on the PGA Tour, a guy who is kind of, he's filtered around the mini tours through the years in the web.com and so on. He's come through the ranks from the bottom to the PGA Tour. And with that, I think, comes probably a somewhat underrated level of determination, and also kind of a steely nerve under pressure. Those guys who have come through literally playing for their own money in the mini tours, those guys know how to handle pressure. They've handled literally having to, you know, drive around in a car around the country and play in events for virtually nothing. So guys in that position can handle pressure, and he certainly did that on Sunday with, as you say, Carl, so much on the line, with potentially the last spot into the Masters being available to the winner of that event. And he was there, and he was in the final group with Jamie Lovemark, who unfortunately crumbled a little bit on the final day. But Jim Herrmann was really the steady and composed throughout, almost like Lydia Ko. He's a relatively steady driver. He's actually, I think, he's something like 15th in total driving on the PGA Tour, which is perhaps better than you maybe think he is. But he's not the longest hitter. He's not the most flashy player. But he got the job done, and he was very consistent throughout. And there were so many other great players who were threatening at some point during the final round. Dustin Johnson had a great start to the week. He was there on Sunday. Henrik Stenson was there, who perhaps maybe feel that he should have won the event in the end. But Henrik's had this kind of remarkable run recently. I think it's now 8 times he's finished second since his last victory around the world, which is not a great streak to have. It certainly indicates that he's playing well and he's very consistent. But not to get a job done is obviously hugely disappointing. But Herrmann was really strong, really good. And then when he did a bit of luck on the 16th, where he missed the hit in the bunker, he holds the bunker shot to birdie that edge ahead of Stenson. And on an 18th hole there, with the water ominously facing on the left-hand side, it's easy to bail out right into the bunker. That's kind of the favourable shot on that last hole. But what did he do? He hit it straight down the middle of the fairway. Iron shot, middle of the green, 2 putts. Thank you very much. First-time winner on the PGA Tour. Masters invitation. And he said it himself, he could never really believe that this was really possible. And of course, the reality is, with all these players, we kind of build up the rags to riches kind of aspect to it, and that's understandable. But all these guys in the tour, you know, they are there for a reason. They're all among the top, you know, 150 players in the United States or even around the world. They're there for a reason. These guys are high-quality golfers. They may not be contending every week, maybe kind of unfashionable, not really well-known names, but on any given week, these guys can catch fire and can win events. And I think that was certainly the case of that. This year has kind of been dominated by more of the established names winning, Adam Scott, Jason Day, and guys winning events, multiple events on the tour this year. So to see a guy like Jim Herman was a bit of a different kind of thing to have. Obviously fantastic for him. Going to Augusta this week, making his debut there. It's a life changer for these guys. You know, even though he's earning a decent living on the PGA, to now have the security of a couple of years on the tour, all the exemptions into the Players' Championship, the PGA Championship, 2-year exemption on the tour, and obviously the Masters. So a real kind of a nice story, almost a fairy tale story, as close as you can ever get to, I think, on the PGA Tour. And it was certainly a great win. And the way he played under pressure was pretty impressive. And as I say, I think that does come from the fact that this guy has come from the bottom, and people who have done that, you know, they know how to handle pressure. They've had to deal with probably the even greater pressures than someone like Jordan Spieth has done, who's almost had everything not handed to him, but he's glided through the game kind of progressively and easily. But guys like Jim Herman, they have to work harder for it, and when they get the results, it probably means even more to them.
Oh, definitely, and I just laughed when he said that he wasn't expecting it, and that he will get his daughter out of school and they'll be at Augusta next week. There's nothing that can stop them from it. So her daughter would be like, "Yes, Dad, you won it. I'm out of school for a week." So anyway, like you mentioned, Henrik Stenson, yes, 8 occasions since he won in the DP World Tour Championship in 2014. Like you said, I wouldn't like that streak, but he's taking it in stride, and he said that he feels like a lot of times he's putting himself in the mix, but he's really haven't been playing really, really good. So he says, when I really play good, something is going to happen. So I hope he does. And one player that I have to note here is playing incredible, and we'll talk later on the Masters. But Rafa Cabrera-Bello is playing some superb golf right now. I mean, after he finished third last week at the WGCL match play, he closed there with a 65 at the golf club in Houston. He claimed 4 players in his home. He really is playing really, really well, and he might not be known here in the States, but you know him well there in the European Tour. He's a heck of a player. He can win, and he can play with the best. And Jordan Spieth, he made an impressive run early. He holds some epic putts. Oh, my God. He looks like he was going to be back. But at least even though he failed away during the weekend, he was pleased to have put himself in the mix. And he said, well, good news. I got myself in contention. So he said that he felt the nerves, and that's something that he needs to work on under pressure. But he knows what to work out. And one last thing, Fred. He's 37 years old, the difference between you, Inkster, and Lee.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I messed that number up. But, hey, did you guys see the NBC was really playing up the thing that Herman was a journeyman and had not succeeded and went to Q school 7 times or whatever. And did you see that Jason Duffner replied on Twitter back at Johnny Miller and the NBC broadcast crew for saying on air that journeyman Herman was going to choke and he was going to allow Stenson to win. And Duffner actually stood up for Herman and said, hey, any week, any of these guys can jump up, just like Kieran was saying, can jump up and win. It should not be a surprise. They've all come through it. They've all done it to get where they're at. They can play a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny Miller also said, actually, incidentally, and that was right, and I did see that, but Johnny Miller also said in that broadcast that Henrik Stenson has only won 4 times. Yes, on the PGA Tour, Johnny, but that's not the entire world.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, that wraps up our weekend backspin. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, what you are all waiting for, our massive wall-to-wall preview of what Jim Nance has baptized as a tradition unlike any other, the Masters. That's coming up.
The Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we are on the practice range. Every week we pick a topic, and each of us take a shot at it. And what better than the Masters? Guys, the Masters Tournament, the first of the men's golf four annual majors, is upon us, culminating months of anticipation. 89 of the world's best golfers have gathered in Augusta, Georgia, where the azaleas have bloomed, and it's time again for a drive down Magnolia Lane. You know, the storylines are plentiful there at Augusta National, as is the history. No sporting event is beholden to more traditions than the Masters. There are so many that you probably never considered or heard about. A lot of the odd, often antiquated procedures and terms used every year at Augusta. It will be the 82nd edition, what Jim Nance has coined as a tradition unlike any other. I mean, we can't wait. I can't wait to see it. It's that feeling. To me, it's that feeling of excitement, like when you're a child and you go downstairs on Christmas Day to opening presents. That's what it is to me this week. Finally, it's here. I can't wait to see it with so many good players playing great to it. I can't remember when last time, but hey, golfers will soon be welcome to the opening tee on Thursday with a familiar call. Four, please. First tee now driving. Oh, my God. My hair is raising.
Billy Payne needs to stand, and you're the man.
Yeah, let's do it. But, hey, before that, I'm going to start with Kieran. Let me start with you. What does the Masters mean to you?
Yeah, well, I think the Masters is obviously a personal affiliation with golf fans more than any other event, simply because it's played in the same golf course every single year. So even the most casual of golf viewers, you know, they are familiar with the golf course. They know all the holes. They know almost what to expect. They've seen all the great moments in the past, and they have that kind of almost like a kindred sort of relationship with the tournament. I think also it's a bit like watching your favorite movie over again, where you know what to expect, but you still enjoy it. And at times you almost remember the great shots of the past. But you also remember your reaction to them, whether you were sitting at home watching it with your dad when you were a kid and getting into golf through the Masters, or whether you were watching it with somebody else, or what you were doing on a particular day, that maybe when Jack won in 86 or when Tiger won by all those shots back in 97, and all these great historic moments that have happened at Augusta National. So it has that real personal connection, unlike any other event. I think also the event has certainly helped with the fact it's the first major of the year, so it has that natural anticipation to it already. And also the fact that it comes at a certain time of year where, for people particularly, I'd imagine, in the kind of the northern part of the United States, northeast United States, where there hasn't been much golf played over the winter until now. And the same over here in the UK, where really the Masters is kind of the unofficial beginning of the golf season, not just for the pros, but for us at home who can go out in the golf course, and the course is now fully opened up and go out and play, and it kind of signals that kind of spring into summertime. So it has that all kind of magical aspect to it, and I think that's why we love it so much, why it has that great kind of... In the end, it is in reality just a little invitational event in Georgia. So it isn't only 8 to 9 players there. It's not the biggest field of the year. It's a very small field this year, even smaller than normal. So it's on paper not the strongest of the major championships, but it certainly has a personal connection with the fans more than any other event. It has a certain kind of cinematic kind of influence and aura to it, which is constantly intriguing. How the golf course itself plays out has... I liken it to, there's so many great ghosts to Augusta, so many guys whose dreams were vanquished there, and also dreams that were made there. And you can never be quite sure what's going to happen. We saw Greg Norman lose a great lead, obviously 20 years ago now, to Nick Faldo, those 6 shots there. Even Craig Stadler, who actually won the Masters in 82, he had a 6-shot lead with 7 holes to play and went into a playoff. So anything can happen at Augusta. All the holes there are kind of set up where there's a potential for greatness, an achievement and a magical shot, but there's also that kind of tantalizing chance of danger and disaster. And it often lures players into a false sense of security and into a trap. I also think Augusta is a bit like any great predator, where it has a beauty that masks the kind of the hidden cruelty that it has. So it's a great event, a great kind of occasion, a great sort of is a tradition in the sense that we all watch it every single year and it has that personal connection with us as golf fans. So there's a lot to love about the Masters, and that's why every year we look forward to it all the time.
I have to agree with you. I mean, every year, it's like golf season starts with the Masters. Fred, to me, if golf would go like NASCAR, they start with the Daytona 500, their Super Bowl ahead. If golf would do that with Augusta, I wouldn't mind it. I mean, that's how much expectation everybody feels towards this tournament. So what does the Masters mean to you?
Yeah, we talk about that every year when the golf season starts. You know, it just doesn't seem like it has any pizzazz. I would certainly do it. But before I get into it, Carlos, we have to give Kieran the O.B. Keeler Award for that beautiful portrayal of that metaphor using the cruelness of the golf course. Well done, Kieran. Well done, sir. Well played, sir.
Well, I must say, I took that out of a piece I wrote for a website called Golf Chick today. So I've kind of stolen my own work there to use it again. So
it's your work; you can do whatever you want.
Exactly,
it's
my own work. Exactly. There's no copyright problems here.
Hey guys, most importantly, you know, as Kieran said, it does signal the beginning of golf season in the North each year. And then on TV, seeing the images of the flowers and the vibrant colors around Augusta National each April reminds us that spring is right around the corner, summer is going to be happening, the grass is going to get greener, and things are going to get a little bit better in the snowy north. Although I've been keeping in touch with everybody up there, they're getting 1 and 3 and 5 inches of snow in northern Ohio and Michigan, and so it's not quite ready for golf season yet up there. And then the history and tradition, the history of the names that have succeeded at Augusta over the years. Hogan and Snead's run of wins in the 50s. Nicklaus, Palmer, and Player winning consecutive years in the 60s. Augusta National is golf's cathedral, and the Masters brings a renewal of golf each year, guys. That's what the Masters is for me. And like Carlos, once the PGA is over every year, I can't wait for the Masters to come again.
And the Masters is played at Augusta National, which is the sacred course where the Masters is played every year. It's the only men's major where the venue is the same every year. You know, it's said, because I haven't had the privilege of going, that the fun spills up Washington Road, and the whole town is hopping from Sunday to Sunday. But then there's nothing quite like it when you pull in the gates of the Magnolia Lane. Inside, of course, it's a different world. Pristine, sedate, stunning. The ambience is more suited to sipping mint juleps and swilling beer, though plenty do, you know. But it's a revered course in all of golf. For a few lucky few who do a stroll around one of the most dazzling backdrops in sports, myriads of shades of green, explosions of color, towering trees, the aroma of pine straw, a reverential murmur punctuated by roars of the crowd. You know, Gary Player once said, "When I think of Augusta, I think of a great beauty." I've always said, if they have a golf course like this in heaven, I hope I'm the golf pro there one day. You know, every hole has a name and a history and a different risk reward for the players, especially the back nine, or like Augusta insists, you call it the second nine. That's where the tournament is won. And that may be the most anticipated stretch of holes in golf. Fred, let me ask you first, what is it so special about Augusta National, and what challenges do you think it presents to the players?
Well, as I mentioned before, the history and tradition for me, I think, is what makes it really special. From the very beginning, Bobby Jones having an idea, purchasing that property, and hiring Alistair McKenzie to bring his dream to fruition was just the beginning. The green jacket, Wednesday Champions Dinner, Wednesday Afternoon Par 3, Snead, Nelson, Hogan, Sarazen, you know, then you got these guys that do off the first tee thing, and that, you know, Palmer, Nicklaus, and Player. You know, the tradition really means something at the Masters, and they hold fast to it and protect it with a vigor. The challenges for the players, it's simply dealing with the immense pressure that accompanies winning that green jacket. They all want it. most recently showed just how much pressure can affect even the top players when Rory completely lost his game on the back nine on Sunday and lost a couple years ago. The greens are probably the biggest challenge at the golf course. The player that succeeds has to have his best putting week, but also be precise on his approach shots so that he has a chance with the putter. There are simply places you cannot put the ball and expect to make a birdie or even a par. There are more difficult golf courses in the world, but no golf course is more perfect than Augusta National.
Kieran, let me tell you, you know, GMAC once said, there's not that many golf courses in the world that give you goosebumps, but when you step on the frisbee, St. Andrews and maybe Pebble Beach, but at Augusta, you really feel like you're following in the footsteps of the iconic players in the game. Augusta gives you the feeling you're in the presence of greatness, and it never gets old. I always get a special feeling when I go back. You know, it's a common thing to hear those kind of things from the players to speak so highly about Augusta National. So now I go take the question to you. Why is it so special for you about Augusta National, and what challenges do you think it presents to the players?
Well, I think the challenges are actually, the biggest challenge really is what you've just said there, is that the players are almost overawed by the venue. And I think again, most of those players were like us, where they grew up watching the event on television, it may have actually inspired them to start playing the game. So to find themselves on that property, to find themselves with a chance to win potentially, that can be psychologically a difficult thing to overcome. And that golf course is one that is psychologically very demanding. There's a lot of precision involved on it. Yeah, as Fred said, you have to find the right part of the green. If you're above the hole at Augusta, you really have no chance. And it is very much nowadays a second-shot golf course where you have to be precise with your irons. If you start missing greens, it doesn't matter how great a putter you are, the golf course will catch you out eventually. And if you start hitting the wrong part of the green, then suddenly, as Fred said, the putting becomes precariously difficult and almost impossible. So for me, it's a golf course that almost asks every question of your game. Nowadays, it's more of a long-hitter's golf course. I think it certainly helps that you hit the ball further, so you can obviously have a shorter club into the green. You know, I'd much rather go into those greens with an 8-iron than a 4-iron. And that's, again, another thing nowadays, where the golf course is slightly tighter in certain places than it used to be. There are more trees in certain holes, like number 11, for example, like number 15. So you have to be more accurate with your driving. It's not so much about straight driving, like the US Open always is a straight, narrow lane. Augusta's about finding the right angles into the greens, the right part of the fairway, so you get the right bounce in the fairway, the right elevation, so you get to get more carry, more run off the ball, so you have a shorter approach. And again, it's just about holding your nerve, really. And many great players, you haven't done that. Even players who actually won the Masters. You know, how many Masters should Seve have won? He won two, but he had chances to win three or four more. Tom Watson was another one. Even Jack Nicklaus finished second, I think, four times at Augusta. So all these guys, you know, came up short at some point. It is a remarkably difficult event to win, despite the fact it had the smallest field of the year, arguably, certainly, definitely, the least competitive field of the year. But at the same time, the golf course almost evens that out, and it still presents a remarkable challenge to these players. In terms of the golf course, it has the way it plays in terms of the excitement of it and the way the kind of the risk and reward aspect to it, where there's so much danger and so much potential for making birdies. You know, it's a golf course where you see many guys have 5-6 birdies but shoot 72 or 73. There's that real kind of potential for greatness and also disaster. So that's also tantalising there as well, which is intriguing. So it has a natural excitement to the back nine, as you said, Carlos, is obviously thrilling. Those great holes around the turn. Number 13 is probably the best risk and reward par 5 in golf. So much to it that it comes together. But at the same time, you know, it's not a perfect golf course. You know, there are some holes on it that aren't very good. The 11th hole is not very good nowadays. The 4th hole is absolutely terrible from the back tee. It's essentially, you know, 240 yards, absolutely no bailout. It's just a hit and hope. So there are some holes to it, since the changes were made to it in more recent years, that have declined as such. I think some of the green complexes at times are a bit too firm and fast, and consequently it becomes a little bit gimmickish. But at the same time, they do more recent years, they have got the balance right in the course setup, where it is still playable but also challenging. There was a time about kind of 10 years ago where the golf course was actually too difficult, and you didn't have those roars on Sunday that you used to get in the years gone by. But we kind of had more of that in recent years. The golf course this week, well, obviously, there's forecasts and wind, particularly throughout the weekend, so That comes with all different challenges as well. It becomes even harder then to find those greens, to find the right parts of those greens, and even judge your club selection when you're playing with number 12, for example, that par 3 that terrorises the players. So that there's so many ingredients to the golf course. I think the biggest thing about it is the players are so familiar with the images of it that at times it can be so probably harder there than any other event to block out your surroundings, you know, to actually focus on what you're doing and not get overawed and ahead of yourself. It's probably harder there than at any other event. So that psychological element is probably what makes it the most challenging golf course. And it's, even though the scoring would not suggest that, I think in terms of closing out an event, it's probably the most challenging of all the majors in respect that, you know, all the other guys can make a run at you and you could also defend it as well. So there's so much going on there, and it obviously makes it a really potentially intriguing Sunday. Obviously the cliche is the back nine is when it really starts on Sunday. Last year the back nine is actually over by the end on Sunday because how good Jordan Spieth was. So hopefully we have a closer event this year where there's more guys involved at the top going head to toe, and when you have that, it's back and forth and it is genuinely cinematic and exciting. And that's why we love it. So that golf course brings out excitement. If the players can deliver that, then we'll have a great spectacle.
And like you mentioned, it provides for either greatness or potential disaster. That, like those examples that you mentioned, I remember maybe two very key greatness moments. And back in 2009, when Anthony Kim did 11 birdies on the second round, that's a record that still stands there. Obviously, he didn't win, but you know that was incredible round. And of course, Charles Schwartzel, who has been the only one to finish with four birdies to win. I mean, that was incredible. So it gives that potential. And as we reported there earlier about a month ago, Augusta National have bought purchased land that is going to allow to lengthen the par 5, 13 to nearly 560 yards. So next year, this is going to be even different. You know, that typically that's not like duckleg left hole requires, you know, the better players to hit a hard draw around the trees on the left while running Race Creek, which, you know, if it's executed properly, like in the case of Bob Watson, he can set up a mid-iron to a green. But anyway, it provides a lot of challenges, and that back nine definitely provides for a lot of show there, especially on Sunday, to see who's going to win it. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the individual chances of the top players and the rest of the field, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we are gonna keep our massive wall-to-wall preview, and we're gonna talk about players now. We talked first about the history, what it means, about the course, but what about the players? You know, we mentioned that the storylines and so many players heading this year into the Masters, playing great, so many different players winning, and we have to talk about, of course, Jordan Spieth is looking to defend his record-setting victory from a year ago. Jason Day, the new number one, he's seeking to continue one of the hottest stretches in golf history. Rory McIlroy, he's hoping to complete a career Grand Slam. Phil Mickelson, at 45, he aims to join Tiger Woods and Arnold Palmer with a fourth Masters title. Bubba Watson is targeting a third green jacket in 5 years, but we have to start with the champ, Jordan Spieth, and his chances of going back-to-back. It's his third appearance. He won it last year. And he's only four players in the 81-year history of the Masters have gone back-to-back and presented the green jacket to themselves. They are the cream of the game, like Tiger, Jack, Faldo, and Spieth. That's what Jordan Spieth is up against this year. He's up against history. He will contend at many more Masters throughout his career, but he comes to this year edition a little worn out and not in top form. That's a little odd to say so early in the season and for the fourth most important event of the year. However, he spent the last quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year playing all over the world and admitted he was wiped out in January. He's already planning to take a different approach to scheduling in the future, thank God. Different obligations did not give him many weeks of the state tour, and it showed without even play, but of course, none of that matter because this is a player who has done second and first in just two career Masters starts. He's the best strategist in the game and already knows what he wants to do on every shot at this course, even at 22 years old, which is remarkable. He was deadly all last year on 15 to 25 foot putts, saving the most crucial pars and making birdies you're not supposed to. A recall of that on Augusta's famous putting surfaces, and he'll be back in the hunt for a second straight jacket. So, Fred, what do you think about the chances of Jordan Spieth going back to that?
First of all, I don't think Spieth will win this year. He just has been a little bit off. He's not been quite putting like he did last year, but he's been putting very well. Don't get me wrong. It's just not quite as good. But his tee to green game has been way down from where it was last year. He's missing drives and spots where he shouldn't miss it. He's not getting his approach shots in the right place to give him chances to make some putts. So he's just been a little bit off, and I just think it's, you know, from all the stuff that he's done since last year, it's just a lot for a young guy. So, you know, I don't see him winning, but I do see him contending and being, you know, top 10 in there by Sunday afternoon. I think this place, he loves this place. He loves this tournament. So I think he'll do well, but I just don't see him winning. Things just have not been going quite right for him this year.
Kieran, like I mentioned, you know, he's been a little worn out, and like Fred mentioned, I don't think I see him winning, especially because of that. But what do you think is his chances of repeating?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you both. I think the problem for Spieth, and he has shown kind of signs of life in the past couple of weeks of obviously the way he played at Houston, he had a couple of good matches in the match play as well. But I think compared to the performance of last year where he played just superbly, his putting was great, his whole game was terrific. He was really consistent throughout the week. And actually, all of last year, he was in the top 15 in each of the strokes gained categories. So his entire game was really strong. It wasn't just one aspect to it. We focus on the putting, obviously, understandably given how flashy it is from 30 feet, which is incredible. But his whole game was really good last year. It's not quite at that level this season. And I think for Spieth, given how well so many of the other top players are playing right now, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Rory McIlroy, and so on, I think for Spieth to beat those guys over 72 holes, he has to be at his best. And I don't think he's quite there yet. However, like Fred said, he obviously has a great record at Augusta. You know, 2 years of an average of 1.5 as your finish is obviously incredible. A golf course, normally the golf course, it really players have to take a while to adjust to and to learn and understand. He has a great kind of knowledge of it. He sourced out Ben Crenshaw in the past to get his knowledge of the course and tap into that. So he has a great understanding of the course and the way it plays. But like Fred said, I think some of his approach play hasn't been good enough this year. Even his wedge play at times, 100 yards in Augusta is obviously very crucial in certain places. I don't think it's quite sharp enough to contend necessarily. So I think, Spieth, you know, you never know what could happen. He could catch fire and do something incredible, but I just don't really see it. I think, as I say, I think for him to have a real chance of winning here, he has to be at his very best to beat the guys who are playing better, who perhaps have more natural advantages than he does in terms of their long game and their ball striking. The guys like Bubba and Jason and Rory, they are, quotes, you know, kind of in inverted commas, better players as he is from tee to green, the longer drivers and better strikers of the golf ball. So I think Spieth has to be at his very best to come close to them. I don't think he's quite there. So I think Spieth will kind of enjoy his week as defending champion. Obviously, he hosts the champion's dinner this evening, so he'll enjoy that experience. Obviously, he'll probably be looking forward to going on the golf course and kind of get away from all the attention that you get as defending champion. But you never know what he can do, but I just don't really see him. Like Fred said, I can't see him winning this weekend, but you never know.
You never know. Well, he's one of the best players in the world. But anyway, from the champ, we go to the world number one. That's Jason Day. In his sixth appearance, his best finish is a T2nd in 2011. And no one in golf has been more successful than Jay Day since late July 2015. He's the current number one in the world and has won his last two and six of his last 13 starts. My God, that's a rate that sounds like it was ripped right out of Tiger's record book. And it's hardly as if Day's been running up his numbers in lighter field events. A PGA Championship, two FedEx Cup Player events, a Bay Hill win, and a WGC account for five of his six victories. Those are tough tournaments. Translation, Jason Day has won five of the eight biggest tournaments in the state since August 2015, unless he isn't able to overcome the back stiffness that bothered him during his match play win in Austin, I see there's no reason to think why he won't contend to add a green jacket to his wardrobe. So, Kieran, what do you think about the hottest player on the planet, world number one, Jason Davidson?
Well, he certainly is the hottest player on the planet right now, and you mentioned the stat there of 6 wins in 13 events, and what's actually most impressive about that is really the long break he had in the winter. He didn't really play from September up until the new year. He had a long break from the game. So despite that gap and having a second child and so on, he came back from that, and he's continued where he left off last year, which is obviously really impressive. Jason Day, obviously, the last sort of 5 years, really starting with that second place at Augusta in 2011, has really contended in more majors than he has not. You know, the amount of top fives he has in majors is quite incredible. And finally getting that one under his belt last year at Whistling Straits obviously sets him apart, because obviously now he knows he can actually win one of these things, and that gives him that psychological advantage. Confidence obviously is no issue for him right now. He feels supremely confident. And has, you know, many ways a perfect game for Augusta in the sense that he has a long hitter, he's a very good iron player when he gets going, has a good short game, and when he gets going, he's a really fantastic putter. So he has all the attributes that are there, potentially to go and win the Masters. But at the same time, I was slightly troubled by certain aspects of his performance at the match play. Even though he found a way to win that, I think at times, particularly in the final, and even in the semi-final with Rory, I think Day's approach game wasn't that great. He had a great short game, had a lot of great up and downs, particularly in the final, I think, three in a row to beat Rory Westhuizen. So Day's game has been really good, but there are some question marks there for me. I'm not sure, think back to the Austin Country Club there, I'm not sure some of the places he hit the ball there, he will get away with that same mistake at Augusta. So he has to kind of rub that out of his game and improve on that aspect to what he's got. But at the same time, he's obviously, I think he's deservedly favourite for the event. I think he will certainly, I think he'll contend over the weekend. I think he's too good not to, in too good form. But will he win or not? Well, we'll wait and see. But I think Jason Day will certainly be a contender, but I still think, a little bit like Jordan Spieth, there's some aspects of his approach play. Even with one event, and he won a match play then, and he played great for the most part. But at the same time, from tee to green, I still think Augusta, he can't make as many mistakes as he did in the match play. And you might get away with some of them, but not as many as he did on that final day. So we'll wait and see for Jason Day. But certainly, I think he's certainly deservedly the favourite and expected to contend. Obviously, it would be a great story for him. It's an event that obviously he's grown up loving. He watched Tiger win there, and that's really got him into the game when he was a kid. Obviously, had a difficult childhood, which has been well documented. So, Jason Day, it would be a great story for him. Obviously, another Australian winning there after Adam Scott finally ended that long hoodoo of Aussie guys not winning at the Masters. But there is kind of the thing about Jason Day. We said the same about his fellow Queenslander, Greg Norman. Oh, this guy's too good not to win the Masters. This guy's the perfect game for Augusta. Well, it never happened for Greg. And you know what? It might not happen for Jason either.
Hey, Jason is playing great. So, but I have to agree with you. I think in the WGC, it was more Louis Eisen who lost the final than Jason Day winning it. And he definitely has been playing great. But like you mentioned, I have to agree 100%. He has to do better than we did, that he did that last day. But hey, it's a 4-round thing, and he's playing great. And Fred, what do you think about Jason Day trying to become back-to-back majors?
Hasn't he won a couple tournaments already this year? I think he's playing pretty good. And besides that, I don't know if you guys remember, but he does live in Ohio, so he's got to get going for it. And another thing, in the last 12 majors, he has finished top 10 in 7 of them. He seems to always rise up in the majors. So he's playing very well. He's done pretty well. He's had a T2 and a third at Augusta in the last few years. I look for him to do very well. Again, we're going to talk about it later, but he's one of my top guys this week. I really look for him to be right there when they're handing out the green jacket.
He certainly is the world number one, and he has to be counted everywhere. Let's go now to Rory McIlroy. In his 8th appearance, his best finish, his 4th last year. And with the weight of another shot at completing the career Grand Slam awaiting him at Augusta, the former boy wonder is an inconsistent mystery heading into this year's Masters. There was that finishing 75 at Riviera after three straight sub 70 numbers, twin 72s on his way to a miscut at the Honda Classic, that 74 that doomed his chances for a win at Doral, and waterlogged dual 75s to accompany a 67 and a closing 65 at Bay Hill. I mean, he remains the most naturally talented player in the world. And you get the feeling that he's going to win the Masters with a round of 75 or a 40 sandwich in there on a nine-hole stretch. But he is mad about his play, and I think, you know, we're going to talk about who we think he's going to win later. But, Fred, do you think he can straighten the ship and win this Masters? How about his chances of winning?
Yeah, to answer your question, Carl, yes, I do think he can straighten the ship and win. When he is on, he is the best player. Augusta gives you big fairways to drive the ball into, and we all know that when Rory is driving the ball well, he has the course has his attention, and he plays much better. So a place like Augusta should fit right into his total program. So, you know, and he's done well there before. He just had that unfortunate nine holes when things went sideways a few years ago. And I think he needs a Masters to complete his career at Grand Slam, I believe. So I really look for Rory to come out firing on all cylinders. I don't see him laying back and waiting for the tournament to come. I see him firing out on Thursday and Friday, and if he's doing that and he's playing well, I think it'll carry right over in the weekend for him. You got to put him right there in the top three prospects to win the tournament, I think.
He, like I mentioned, he's mad, and I think there's a chance that he, like, I have to agree with you. I think he has to go for it. He has nothing to lose anyway. He hasn't won it. So if everything else is failing, he has to go for it from the get-go. So, Kieran, do you think he can channel in that angriness that he has and win this this year? How about his chances?
Well, he's certainly very determined. And like Fred said there, he'll go out there all guns blazing on Thursday, Friday. And Rory today in his press conference spoke about being at a fast start for him is crucial. He wants to get ahead of everybody else in the first 2 days and kind of build from there. So, like, I expect Rory to be quite aggressive in the first couple of days. He goes out last on Thursday afternoon. He's actually going to be the last person that will hit a shot, a tee shot, on the first hole on Thursday. So he's going to go out there. I think he's going to have the best of the weather on Thursday, which will obviously come as an advantage to him. And I expect Rory to have a really strong week this year. I think the golf course, he played very well last year. Didn't really contend in the end, but he had his best finish at Augusta, finishing it well at leaderboard. So I think Rory is going to bring that to this week. Obviously, he had that experience 5 years ago now, which really was, I think, a character-building experience for him there, where I think he made a lot of mistakes that day. He was very young at the time. And you know what? He bounced back from that. He went on to win the US Open 2 months later by a mile at Congressional. So Rory's got I think that's somewhat underrated level of resilience. I think he's quite determined here. I think you saw what Jordan Spieth did last year and Jason Day. He wants some of that action as well. And like Fred said, when Rory's on his game, he is the best player in the world for me, unquestionably. You know, the ability he has with the driver and his iron play, I think he can go up a gear that no one else quite can. But at times, I think there's a danger that he could potentially become too aggressive. And Augusta, even though we talk about the great roars and the golf course seems to reward aggressive play, even though it might do it at times, at the same time, there's a lot more corpses in that golf course than guys who bit off more than they could chew in the past. So you try and be too aggressive there, you can fall into the traps, fall into the water hazards, or hit the wrong side of the green, or end up making some huge numbers, like he did 5 years ago. So I think Rory's got to be, at the same time as being aggressive, but also patient. I think that's what Tiger typified so well there when he was successful around the turn of the century, where he was aggressive but also patient. He meticulously took apart that golf course, picked his opportunities for the moment to be aggressive. Rory's got to do the same thing because he has, in many ways, the same sort of toolbox that Tiger had. So I think Rory, in terms of his capabilities, for me, it's almost surprising that the last major for him to actually win is the Masters. His game almost seems tailor-made for it. Long driver, brilliant iron player, and when he gets going, he's a fantastic putter as well. He's a very streaky putter, but that can be successful there too. So if all comes together for him, I think he's a very good chance of winning this weekend. But at the same time, you know, every year now, from this point in his career, he will come to Augusta until he wins it, if he does, with the knowledge that this is the one last hurdle to get over to complete the career Grand Slam. This is the one last title to get to complete the set. And that's a unique kind of pressure. Not many guys have had. And often that last hurdle can be the most difficult one to get over. Just ask Phil Mickelson at the US Open or Sam Speed in the past as well. Those two guys finished second US Open so many times. Even Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson at the PGA Championship. You know, the last segment can be the hardest to attain. But at the same time, I think Rory is capable of winning the Masters. I think he's got a game that the odds would say he probably will win the Masters at some point. But at the same time, like I said earlier, there are no guarantees on that golf course. You know, Greg Norman, for example, Tom Weisskopf finished second there four times. Johnny Miller, even guys like David Duval, Davis Love, you know, those kind of guys, they all had chances to win there. Ernie Els. But the golf course, even though those guys were probably at some point talked about as being, well, the golf course is perfect for them, Augusta's made for them, they're going to win the Masters, but they didn't. So until you actually do it, the harder it is to actually get, because in the end, it's once a year that pressure is intense, because you want the title that much, you want to have that jacket. And it has become such an iconic symbol, you want to be part of it. And I think for, you know, guys like Spieth almost have the advantage now where he can almost freewheel it for the next 20, 30 years. He's already got one. Rory doesn't have that luxury. So until he gets one, it's going to be hard. But certainly his capabilities, his skills that he has are ideally suited to the golf course. So if he plays well, he will certainly have a chance to win on Sunday. But I would like to see him do it. It would be a great historic moment. But at the same time, when you're on the brink of history, it can often be kind of over daunting and difficult to achieve. But Rory has certainly got the credentials, but he's got to go out and do it.
And from Rory McIlroy, we move now to the 2013 Masters Champion. That's Adam Scott, who's in his 15th appearance, and he should make another run at the green jacket, undaunted by being the poster boy for this year's highly publicized anchoring band. He has won twice, going back-to-back at the Honda Classic and Doral. He finished second at Riviera as well. All the attention is on the form he's found with the short putter, but the tee-to-green game is also there for the man most say has the best swing in the world. He ranks in the top 11 in tour in driving distance, greens in regulation, strokes gained, and scoring average. This is a great time of the year to be doing almost everything really well, and Scotty is the hottest player in the game heading into Augusta besides Jason Day. So I ask you, Kieran, how about Adam Scott's performance expected this week?
Well, my one question for Adam is really, has he peaked too early? We had that obviously great run in the Florida Swing, but that was a few weeks ago now. And, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent, but when you lose that bit of form, maybe he has peaked too early. There's many guys who have been successful before the Masters and haven't actually won the event from that. So that's a question for me. Also, the putting aspect, he certainly silenced many doubters that questioned his future in the game at the top level. He silenced those guys. He played great. The putt he made to win Doral, I think, was a real kind of watershed moment for him where he made that crucial pressure putt, and I think that kind of silenced any doubts about his putting from there. But at the same time, as I've talked about, Augusta has the most precarious and undulating and fast greens in the game, and even the best putters in the world can have their nerves tested there and even damaged. So that will tell. But like I said a minute ago, you know, Adam Scott's a former champion. He has, there's no pressure on him to win it for the first time. He's already in the Champions Dinner every year. He already has the jacket. He has that. He can almost relax a little bit knowing he has nothing to lose, really. You know, guys like Rory, they do have something to lose. They haven't got it yet. Jason Day as well. But Adam Scott has the knowledge. He's already got it, so he can maybe take more chances than those other guys will. Maybe feels less pressure in the build-up to the event. But that said, he said today in his press conference that he still feels more nervous at the Masters than in any other tournament. So that's how much it means to him. And obviously to a taste of success on the flip side of that, in the Masters, and that kind of intoxicating thrill of winning there. And of course he won that great playoff with Angel Cabrera, that brilliant putt he held in the 10th, and the great reaction he had to finally end that Australian drought at Augusta. When you have that experience, you want it again. You want that same thrill, that same adrenaline rush. But Adam Scott, I think he's certainly very capable. He has that again. He said there's cut. He has a brilliant golf swing. He's a great ball striker. If he gets those aspects of his game spot on, then I certainly think he's got a good chance of contending. Odd enough, I don't, and a lot of people do fancy him to win this week. I don't necessarily fancy him to win this week, but I certainly think he'll be a factor going into the weekend. But at the same time, I do have some question marks whether he's going to be down the last nine holes quite to the same level as some of the other guys will be. But at the same time, Adam Scott's certainly one of the top five players who have a really good chance of winning this. And that will be the case for the next few years, because in the end, he's in this... He's one of the older guys, if you like. We're talking about Spieth and Day and Rory, all in their 20s. You know, Adam Scott's one of the more almost veteran players. He's played here 15 times, as you say, Carl. He knows the golf course better than all those guys do, almost combined. And that experience comes with something. That's important. That counts. And Adam Scott, he might very well win a second Masters this weekend, but I'm not sure. But I think he will contend. And, you know, actually, before we go, it's actually really good to see him silencing those doubters. I like him an awful lot. He's very, you know, gentlemanly guy. He's a very inoffensive character. There's nothing to dislike about Adam Scott. He's also a very good-looking guy, by the way, so that helps too. But he has a lot going for him. And but he's not brazen or arrogant with it. You know, there's a lot to like about him. So it's good to see him still be at the top and still playing well, because I had my doubts about his putting, because I remember last year when he had that chance at the Open Championship and missed that terrible short putt at St. Andrews, I think, in the 15th, and that cost him the title that day, a chance to win. So, you know, there were some doubts coming in, but he's proven everybody wrong and perhaps shown a determination and a grit that maybe we would not normally attribute to him. I think, oh, he's kind of the pretty boy. He doesn't really have the steely nerve. He's not aggressive. But you know what? He's more aggressive than you think he is. He's a guy, he's a major champion, a Masters champion. And if you've won it once, you've got a better chance than anybody else to win it again, because you have that experience, you have that knowledge, and you have that almost free willing aspect where you can actually go out there and have a go because you've already got the title. So Adam Scott, I think he'll contend this Sunday.
Fred, how about Adam Scott?
Well, in the majors of the last few years, he has a stellar record. A lot of top tens. He had the win in 2013 at the Masters. But really the biggest thing for me, for Adam Scott, is he's got Stevie on the bag. It's a lock. Give him the jacket right now.
Oh, my goodness. We'll see about that. I am the one that says he should have stayed with the other one. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think so too, Carlos. I think the guy, David Clark, who he's won twice with this year, if you were him, you'd be pretty irritated that you're not at the Masters this year. I think that was quite poor for Adam Scott, to be fair.
Yeah, that's why I'm mad at him. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm mad at him too.
that was purely a business decision, not personal. You know, that he feels he has the best chance to win with Stevie. I happen to agree with him. I think Stevie pushes him, and Adam needs to be pushed. I like it a lot, you know. I don't really care for Stevie that much, but Stevie's a hell of a caddy, and I think he brings out the best in Adam Scott.
I just believe you. You don't break it. If it's not, you don't fix it if it ain't broken, and he didn't have it broken to change. But anyway, that's it.
Like Fred said there, you know, Adam attributes the putt that I mentioned that he holds on number 10 to win the playoff against Cabrera. He attributes that read to Stevie Williams. He trusted him, the knowledge that Williams has had of that golf course, playing with Tiger all those years, of course. But the thing for me, though, is, you know, with Stevie Williams in the bag, I'm almost rooting against Adam Scott, because I don't want Stevie the Eagle to be even bigger than it is right now.
totally agree. I am with you.
Stevie's going for his fourth career Grand Slam or something.
But, yeah, and you, so the thing is, Fred, he actually believes that, which is sad.
I know.
Let's talk about Ricky Fowler now. I mean, he's in his sixth appearance. His best finish was a T5 in 2014, and he's often thought of as a player with more style than substance. But he has taken his career to the next level in the past 2 years. I mean, working with Tiger is also in coach Butch Hartman has not hurt. Okay? But his wins at the Players, the Scottish Open, and the Deutsche Bank have cemented his place among the game's elite. And now that he's ranked among the top five in the world, the next logical step for him is a major championship. The analytics reveal that he plays his best at the biggest events, with a few bad bounces preventing the first career major. The game has been too good for that wall to not come down soon. His major record has been superb the past couple of years, and he's separated from the chaff, placing himself among the favorites of the Augusta National and every other major this year. Fred, He's knocking on the door. Can he finally open it and get in?
Yeah, I can. I think his strength is in his short game. If he will just keep the ball and play off the tee, he's punting long enough. So, you know, we've seen in the past guys like Zach Johnson, Charles Schwartzel win at Augusta. You don't, you know, it really helps if you're like Bubba Long, that kind of thing. It really does help. But if you're a really good wedge player, you know, and I've said this before, over 72 holes, if you're consistently a good wedge player, you're giving yourself good luck, your good looks. And so all you, it's much easier putting, you know, from 5 feet or 8 feet than it is from 16 or 20, especially at Augusta, because then you've got some big breaks in there. So over the course of 72 holes, I do like Ricky Fowler from the standpoint that he has a tremendous short game. And if he, I think the only element he lacks to get over the hump is a little bit of confidence that I can get this thing done. And I think the players last year took care of that confidence thing.
You know, he likes to wear orange in the final day. And orange is just a mixed of red and yellow. So he has something of tiger in there in that color. So, you know, I don't know. He has a chance. Kieran, what do you think about Ricky Fowler?
Well, I'm not sure that orange will go very well with green. That's my one kind of caveat with Ricky Fowler this weekend.
We've got no plans to cover every angle on the Masters here. We're even talking color schemes here. All right.
Absolutely. No other comprehensive coverage you can get. But Bernard Langer 30 years ago wore a remarkably terrible pair of red trousers that looked shocking with the green jacket. So we have some bad colored winners winning before, if you like. But Ricky Fowler, I think Ricky Fowler will win a major championship in the next couple of years. But I don't think it will be the Masters. I think this is the one that's almost least suited to him. In the respect that I think Ricky is very much a player who, look at the way he plays in the Open Championship, and so I think he's a very creative player. He's very good in bad conditions and in windy conditions. But my one issue with him here at Augusta is I don't think his ball flight is high enough to sufficiently get the ball close enough to the hole for longer distances. It's fine with his wedges, but I think with shorter mid-irons, I think he might struggle there to be consistently up there with the other guys. That could be a problem for him. That said, if he has a great hot streak up with a short game and the putter, then obviously that can bridge that gap. I think Ricky's one issue with Augusta is the fact he has a low ball flight, and it's harder to stop the ball in certain parts of the greens with that ball flight. It helps him in the Open Championship, because winning the Scottish Open last year as well at Gullen, so he plays well in difficult conditions. I think he's I think he has got a lot of substance. I do like Ricky Fowler. I have for many years. And like Fred said, the win at the Players' Championship, that brilliant finish there, you know, really silenced any critics that he had about his temperament, his ability under pressure. Then again, at the Scottish Open, of course, as well, and in Abu Dhabi this year. So he has won events, international events. He plays well in different conditions. There's a lot going for him. And he certainly believes more in himself now. He had that great year a couple of years ago where he came so close and all the majors, had top five in all of them. So he has that credentials now. He's got the big game for the big moments. But I just wonder if Augusta National is suited to his game. I'm not so sure it is. That said, there are many players who can come through and win the Masters once and not do anything else in their career there. I think Ricky, as I say, I think the ball flight is an issue. But if the wind picks up as expected this weekend, then maybe that will play into his hands. And I say the last time the wind was quite high, it was back in 07 when Zach Johnson won. You know, a shorter hitter, a guy who's a very good wedge player, like Fred said. You know, those guys, when the weather is worse at Augusta, the golf course becomes trickier and the grinders start to do better. And I think Ricky's a very good grinding golfer. He's a guy that can work hard and get tough results out of his game. You know, he's someone who gets the most out of what he's got. He doesn't necessarily have the same ability off the tee or length or imperious iron play like Rory or Bubba Watson, but I think he has a grit to him, and when the conditions are awkward, that grit can count for a lot. So I think Ricky, I think he'll have a solid week. I think he'll finish top 15, maybe top 10, but I just don't think he's going to win this weekend.
Let's move now to a player that, oh my God, he has been the bridesmaid lately, and that's Henrik Stenson. He's in his 11th appearance. His best finish is a T14, 2014, and, you know, he's a big-hitting Swede who should have a better record here. He's one of the premier drivers of the tee, and we all know that distance matters at Augusta now, particularly a high ball like Stenson's, just as much as anywhere else. The issue with Stenson is that he so often falls back and hitting 3-wood instead of driver. Now, Stenson hitting 3-wood is one of the most beautiful sounds and sights in the game. But the lack of aggression can cost him. Stenson has made more money than just about anyone in golf over the past 4 years, but he's still without a major. His track record here is in short game struggles on Augusta greens give you pause about whether the Masters will be that major, that first major for him. So, Kieran, how about Henrik Stenson?
Henrik Stenson, of course, turned 40 this week, so he's going in there as one of the older guys, if you like. I think the only player to actually win the Masters for the first time in their 40s is actually Marco Mira back in 98. He won there at 41, that great season he had. So history is not necessarily on Stenson's side. I'm surprised at his record at Augusta, how poor it is given the tools that he has, a great long hitter, a brilliant iron player. I think really the last 3-4 years, I don't think there's been a better ball striker in the game consistently than Henrik Stenson. But at the same time, he's won a lot, but he maybe hasn't won enough, particularly in the past year and a half. You know, actually, with 8 runner-up finishes, he hasn't closed the deal. Even though guys have played better to beat him at times, you know, for most guys, that's not a very good conversion rate. At times, he's gotten his own way. I think Stenson, as well, has occasionally had a very volatile temperament, even though he has kind of the cool demeanour, and he's kind of a cool, joking kind of guy. In reality, he's quite angry. I think he's quite impatient on the golf course, and that can often lead to bad decisions. And when you do that at Augusta, the course will bite back. So that temperament might have been the thing that's held him back in majors to this point. You have to be like Lydia Ko, so calm and so composed and have a real kind of serene demeanour. Stenson hasn't really got that, and that might be the one thing that holds him back from winning a major. That said, you know, he's got all the tools. You know, he's a bit like a Rory or a Bubba Watson. He's a long hitter. He's a brilliant iron player. He's given himself many chances on that golf course. If his putting is decent, then he'll score well there. But the question is, I think he'll make a lot of birdies there. But will he have the right mentality and make the right decisions to not make big mistakes that he has done in the past where he's made double bogeys and triples and so on? You can't do that around there. But it's very easy to do so. Augusta is a course where the round can get away with you very quickly. Even a great round, I think, a couple of years ago where Stenson was, you know, way under par after the kind of first 14, 15 holes. I think he took like 8 on the last hole. I think that was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Actually, when he was just coming back from the kind of the slump that he had, one of many in his career. So Stenson obviously has all the tools there to be a success at Augusta, but I'm not quite sure he has the mindset for it. That said, I think something has got to give with him eventually. I think Stenson will probably, I think he'll better his previous best finish at Augusta this weekend. But the question is, will he be really there on Sunday, have a chance to win? I'm not sure. But at the same time, he's a guy, obviously, he's playing well, he's confident enough. But when he gets in the last 9 holes, last 5-6 holes, does he quite have the coolness under pressure to win it? I'm not so sure.
I am totally agreeing with you. Will he be able to remain calm? Because all those 8 second places, I mean, it has to be in the back of his mind. All of those 8 second places, he had a chance to win those tournaments. Very well, it could have been 8 wins instead of 8 second places. So, Fred, how about Henrik Stenson?
Yeah, you guys hit it right on the head. He does not have a very good record at Augusta National, and his approach there is just not what works. It's just not working. So he needs to change something, and I think Kieran hit it perfectly, that he just can't be as aggressive maybe as he wants to be. And it just blows my mind how someone can hit a 3-wood the way that guy can hit a 3-wood and can't learn to hit or can't find a driver that he can hit the same way and pick up another 15 or 20 or 25 yards with a driver that is really important at Augusta National. You know, he is a tremendous 3-wood player. He hits at 300 yards. That's great. But if he could be hitting a driver out there at 325 and now dropping down 1 or 2 clubs into the green, that makes all the difference at Augusta. So I just don't see Henrik winning here unless he has a massive change in his philosophy of the way he plays the golf course.
And from him, let's move on to the two-time winner in his sixth appearance. He's the winner in 2012 and 2014, going for a third in 5 years. That's Bubba Watson, the master of innovation. I mean, he was runner-up at Doral, which, if history repeats itself, bodes well for his chances for a third green jacket. Bubba had a second-place finish in Doral, both in 2012 and 2014, and went on to win at Costa both years. So, who knew? Anyway, a new back injury that crept up during the third round of the WGC Cadillac Championship, or a good excuse to miss Saturday's rain, knocked him out of Bay Hills, Bears watching. Though we expect Bubba from Baghdad to be healthy, rested, and ready by April 7th. You know, no one has a bigger advantage at Augusta than the big-hitting lefty, whose game could be a mess everywhere else, but can show up and contend in his sleep here, Fred. How about him?
Yeah, Bubba's got to be a favorite. And you guys know he's not one of my favorites, but, you know, he can play that golf course. It seems to get his attention. He seems to like it a lot. He's a Georgia guy, so... He just really does well there. So you can never cut him out. And his length there means so much. It's just like we were talking about maybe Fowler's chipping over the course of 72 holes. If Bubba's driving is halfway, decent for the week, and if he's getting it out there where he wants it, he's giving himself really short irons into every hole. And that makes a tremendous, tremendous difference. So he's not the best putter in the world, but, again, if he's hitting short irons and getting where he needs them, you know, he maybe get uphill putts, uphill looks, and over the course of 72 holes, that gives him the advantage. So you can never count Bubba out at Augusta National for sure. He's always a factor there.
And how about, Kieran, he's not only – big off the tee, and he has that length, but all that way to create shots whenever he's in danger. I mean, I just still remember how he hooked that shot in the playoff against Louis Oosthuizen. I mean, the way he did it to win it. After that, he had to win the tournament. I mean, what do you think about Bubba Watson here?
Yeah, like Fred said, he has kind of the perfect game for that golf course. He's such a long hitter. And he has a great, like you said there, Carlos, kind of a great imagination and a great set of hands, a real artistic kind of streak to his game that really is quite incredible to watch. And the game nowadays where the game's somewhat one-dimensional, everyone hits the ball straight and long, the ball doesn't move as much anymore. But with Bubba Watson, it moves incredibly. He shapes the ball remarkably well, like Lee Trevino did back in the day, or Seve Ballesteros. And I think Bubba, in a way, is a bit like Phil, is almost like the equivalent of Seve nowadays, where you have that great creativity and imagination to his game, and that seems to find favour on that golf course. Like Fred said, I think if Bubba gets his driving up to standard, I think he is on that golf course, not every other week, but on that golf course, he plays to his best. He will be the man to beat, because that long driving gives him a tremendous foundation to succeed there. And if he has that to his game, then I think he will be hard to beat, and he will certainly have a chance to win on Sunday. That said, he's not in the best of health. He's not been feeling very well this week. He's had a sinus infection. He didn't play a practice round on Monday, I don't think, because he wasn't feeling very well. So he's not 100%. That said, it's the old kind of cliche of beware of the ill golfer or the injured golfer. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But Bubba's got he's got the skill set. He's got the tools. He's got the knowledge. You know, that golf course, he's won there twice. You know, what a record to have. You win three times at the Masters. Even though he's not the most popular player, you do that, you're definitively a legend, particularly there. And that's obviously a tremendous thing to have. That said as well, I think Bubba has an emotion to his game that can both work for him and against him. Maybe there it works for him more so than not. And, he's certainly in good form, and he's certainly got all the tools there. But at the same time, he does like even-numbered years, of course, as you said, Carlos, 2014, 2012, and then maybe 2016. But... I don't know. I don't think a lot of people are tipping Bubba to win this week. I understand why, but I've just got a feeling that he's not going to do it. Maybe part of me wants a bit of variety, and maybe it's wishful thinking. You know, nothing against him personally, but I like to see different guys winning, someone else winning the Masters. Like, you know, maybe that's what it is. But I just don't see him winning this weekend. Even though he's got all the things say yes, but I'm saying no.
I'm sure he doesn't like what you just said. But anyway, let's move on now to the guy he beat in the playoff in 2012, and that's Louis Oosthuizen, who has been playing outstanding. He's in his eighth appearance, his best finish. He was that second lost in the playoff in 2012. He won the 2010 British Open Championship, and he's in good form starting this year. I mean, he's finished inside the top 15 in every event he's played in 2016, save one, and has a win and a runner-up in finishing Tautu. I mean, he finished tied for second in two of last year's four majors and was beaten out by Bubba Watson in a playoff, like I mentioned, in 2012. Can he finally break through for his second major title? He's deserving of it, and those who follow the game say either King Louis or Adam Scott has the sweetest swing in the world. Usti will be and should be a trendy pick this week to win, and what do you think here?
Yeah, I think Louis is going to be potentially the man to get the jacket this weekend. I think he's got all the signs to go for him as well. I think he's playing well. He has the perfect game there. He has such a great golf swing, in it, which in the end, you have that swing, you can play well anywhere, and he has been there in the past, of course. And he's played well in the majors recently. He came so close to winning the Open last year at St Andrews, losing in that playoff with Zach Johnson and Mark Leishman. And obviously, even at Chambers Bay in the US Open, Louis was by a mile the best player on the last 3 days. You look at the scoring in those last 3 days, he was miles ahead of everybody else. So this is a terrible first round. So Louis has all the credentials. He's a major champion. He also has a kind of a calm demeanor, I think. He has a very kind of serene manner to his game. I don't think Louis, deep down, has the same level of determination that many other guys have. I think he enjoys his life. He enjoys going back home and having a relaxing time there. But when he gets to the majors, I think he gets a bit more serious, and the game he has is so good. He has, from a sheer ability standpoint, he is one of the probably top five players in the game, and he really should be perhaps winning more than he does. But he's knocking on the door recently. I think at the match play, he's kind of ran out of steam there. A long week at the match play, a lot of matches to play. I think he's kind of ran out of gas in the final against Jason Day. Actually, I think he's just worn down by Jason Day playing so slowly, which is nauseatingly slow. But Louis, I think Louis, if I was to be asking, we're going to ask this later, but I think Louis is one of my picks to win this weekend. I think he has all the tools, all the credentials. He has a brilliant long game, great iron player, and he's a really solid putter as well. He does everything pretty well. That's the thing. And guys who do everything well normally are hard to beat. And I think Louis, when he gets in that position, and he's won a major before, he's won a really historic golf courses, obviously in St Andrews in 2010, came closer again, so he likes that sort of old-fashioned historic place. And again, Augusta National was in many ways modelled on the old course at St Andrews. It's also changed significantly through the years, but had the ethos is kind of similar, and it rewards in some ways a similar kind of player often. So I think Louis is going to be a real contender this weekend. If for someone, we talk about guys who can win for the first time, Rory, Jason, Louis. If you're picking one of those guys, I think Louis might just be the best of them.
Fred, how about Louis Oosthuizen this year?
Well, this is only his sixth start in the PGA Tour this year. He started out with a T44, picked up a T14 at the Cadillac, then a T7 Valspar, and he was runner up, of course, at the Dell Match Play. But he missed a cut last week at the Houston, which maybe is a good thing. He can get a couple more days rest in. So, he's a sweet swinger. Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah, he had a runner-up to Bubba in the playoff. Yeah, he called the Open Championship a major, I guess. I guess he won that little thing over there at St. Andrews one time. But I don't see Louis winning. I just don't see it. Something's missing for me. I don't know what it is, but I don't see Louis doing it.
Well, one thing is for sure. I mean, when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the world. And the secret to his new healthiness, because, he's been in his history with back injuries and all that, he travels with his own mattress. Okay, over the past year, his condition has improved thanks to that. So you can expect that mattress to be there. Hopefully not on the course, but...
Carlos, can I just isn't that amazing? Isn't that the definitive 21st century golf pro? That's unbelievable. Could you imagine Ben Hogan taking his mattress with him everywhere? It's unbelievable.
I mean,
I didn't even know that. That's incredible.
Guys, I have a story for you from Tiger when he played at Kiawa in the 2012 PGA Championship. He rented a house, one of the big houses there, paid a bunch of money for it, took all the furniture out and put his own furniture in.
Oh, my goodness.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, unbelievable.
If you're tired of dealing with
Louis
hotel beds,
his mattress around, that's no big deal.
He gets it. He gets it loaded into an equipment truck and dropped there on his hotel each week on tour. So that's what he's been doing for the past year. That's
my goodness. That's Bobby Jones will be rolling in his grave at that point. The guy's bringing his mattress to the tournament. That's unbelievable.
Well, there you have it. We report everything.
You know what next? Someone bringing their fridge with them every single week, or their, you know, their garden chair, their sofa or something. I don't know. That's unbelievable. I can't get my head around that. I find that's incredible.
Okay, let's go down.
But at the same time, genius. Uh-huh. Makes sense.
Yeah, it is. Definitely is. Let's go now to the three-time winner. In his 24th appearance, lefty Phil Mickelson. He has won it three times. 12 times, he has other 12 times, he has top tens, including 5/3 and a tie for second last year. He's a rejuvenated Phil Mickelson. He most definitely has Georgia on his mind. An inveterate equipment tinker, lefty recently made a change in his entourage as well, putting a frustrating 2015 season behind him by enlisting the services of swing coach Andrew Getson. Though in the midst of the longest losing skid of his career, his last win came in the 2013 Open, he's playing his best ball in a long time, and it has a 45-year-old even more optimistic than usual about keeping up and outlasting the kids at Augusta. Even when he's lost, he still show up at Augusta and post top five. This season, he has shown that he's absolutely not lost. So expect Phil to be back in the hunt again for sure. How about that, Phil?
Yeah, you know, Phil, in 8 starts this year, he's had a second, a third, you know, 3 top 10s, 6 top 25s. He only missed one cut. So he's playing very well. We have not seen Phil play this good for some time. So I look for him to be top of the game this week. You know, he knows that his chances are getting fewer and fewer. So this is a tournament he's really done well in the past. You know, he doesn't have the U.S. Open, but, you know, he can win at Augusta. So he seems to like it there. So, yeah, I look for Phil to do pretty good this week.
Kieran, how about Phil's chances this week?
Well, I think Phil has a great chance of playing well at Augusta every year, no matter how well he's playing before it. The last year he finished second, despite not being in great form. This year, he's in great form. So I think he actually leads the PGA Tour scoring average this season. So Phil's coming in here with a degree of confidence that he hasn't had for a while, a degree of assurance of his swing and his game. Obviously, he's changed coaches. His swing hasn't visually changed. It's the same Phil Mickelson swing he's had for 25 years, the same long, you know, occasionally aggressive swing that he has. But it's working for him right now. He's putting well. He feels good. And when he gets to Augusta, he's rejuvenated. He's a bit like you mentioned at the start of the show, Carl, as a kid going down and downstairs on Christmas morning. Phil's like that when he goes to Augusta. He has that. There's certain guys that just play well there all the time historically, and he's one of them. And he almost kind of, when he gets there, the years come off his age, and he can still contend. And I think Phil will contend. I think he will be a factor at some point. I think he'll get out there. I think he'll score well. I think he'll certainly be in the top 10 going into the final day. The question is whether he will win an event there. Obviously, your winning's it's one thing playing well, then it's actually winning, and that's not the step you've got to try and make, the leap you've got to have. But I think Phil has a very good chance of potentially winning a fourth jacket this weekend. I think he's someone who he's coming in, all the signs are there that he's back to coming near his best, and I think he enjoys being the older guy. I think he's kind of enjoying the, with Tiger not around, Phil's kind of the guy. He's kind of the guys look up to as the player, as the kind of the icon of his generation now, being a 5-time major champion. So I think Phil enjoys that. I think he enjoys competing with the younger guys. He was out playing a match today with Bryson DeChambeau and guys like a money match, naturally, of course, like all is with Phil. He loves that aspect to it. I think Phil's going out there today this week, and he's got I think he believes he's got a chance to potentially win this. And I maybe didn't believe it last year. He almost won it despite that. So I think Phil is has got a real opportunity to potentially become a four-time champion and really join Arnold Palmer, join Tiger, and only Jack Nicklaus was six, so he'll be one of the four most prolific Masters champions of all time if he wins this weekend, and that's obviously a remarkable achievement. And you know what? It might just happen.
And you have to see it. Anyway, if there's a constant, it's Phil Mickelson either on the U.S. Open, not winning, but showing up in Augusta every time. Now onto a guy that you might think, why is this guy on this list? I mean, it's just his second appearance. Last year it was his first, and he finished in the tie for 38. But let me tell you something about Danny Willett. If you're an American, this is the guy who's probably going to crush your Ryder Cup hopes and dreams, okay? He's another star who's not a well-known commodity outside the European Tour, but he's got the game to hang on with any of the other top young talents that get more publicity. A third-place finish in the bracket-style WTC match play last year was an intro to the American audience. He pushed Rory McIlroy into the Euro Tour's playoff system, the race to Dubai, and then posted an early 2016 win at the often-loaded Dubai District Classic. Willett was a decorated English amateur who now seems only to be getting better and better as a pro. You have to consider Danny Willett anywhere. He might be too green to win the Masters, but hey, green is the jacket, so who knows. But he's going to be a factor at the majors this title. Kieran, is he finally ready to break through this side of the pond?
Well, that is a question, and I don't think so. I was a little bit surprised that he had listed his name on this. I think of players who I would put ahead of him as being potential winners. That said, Danny has a lot going for him. You know, he's a great talent, a great kind of way. I enjoy watching him play. He plays a kind of briskness to his game, a kind of a freedom, and you would feel that he has the game to certainly succeed at the top level. He's shown that recently. I think he will contend in majors this year into next coming years, but I'm not sure this will be the week. I think Augusta, even though John C's obviously proven that to be different, but I think, generally speaking, you know, it takes something very special to succeed here early on in your career at Augusta. And Danny's in his second appearance, I'm not sure. That said, of course, is that last week his wife gave birth to their first child, which possibly would have, had it happened this week, you'd have missed the Masters, but it hasn't happened. So maybe that's an omen. He's going to carry on and maybe have a good week here at Augusta, but I don't think Danny will win. We're a long time ago since I had an English winner at Augusta, 20 years since Nick Faldo was the last English winner here, which is remarkable when you consider the guys like Lee Westwood and Paul Casey and Luke Donald and someone who have all been at the top of the game. And at the same time, I think of all the English players, I actually think Paul Casey could be the guy that's going to play the best of them this week. But Danny Willett, he's capable, but I'm just not sure this is going to be his week.
What do you think, Fred?
I've got a long, drawn-out answer here. No.
Okay, so I'm the only one saying that he might have a chance.
I was basically saying that as well, but this are more words.
Okay, no problem.
I'm very conservative, Kieran. You know, I'm not as windy as you are.
I can be accused of many things, but I will agree, I am certainly windy.
Okay. I won't discuss that. I won't argue against it. Let's go to BJ. Dustin Johnson. He's in his seventh appearance. His best finish at T6 last year. He returned from his 6-month tour absence last year with 3 top 10 major finishes, including his now famous Butch 3-footer that gave Jordan Spieth the title at Chambers Bay. He's been in decent form recently from the start of 2016, having lurked around the leaderboards a few times, but it's now been over a year since the world's number 9 player last won the tournament. Breaking that streak and healing past major heartbreak might be a tall task at a venue where he's only finished better than 10th only one time. What you think, Fred, about DJ's chances?
I think he's got the game to do it. I definitely do. He's one of the long guys, so he's like a Bubba, you know, that can move that thing out there. I just think that Dustin Johnson head goes on vacation sometimes in the middle of the round or when it really counts, and he just doesn't stay focused all the time. And in Augusta, you cannot take a break. You have to be on every shot, on every hole, or it's going to eat you up. And I love Dustin Johnson's game. I like to watch him play. I just don't think he's going to win this week.
What do you think about DJ's chances, Ken?
Two words. I agree. There's actually three words. Four words. I agree with Fred.
That's the smartest thing you've said tonight, Kieran.
So man, this last two on the list went right quickly. No. I mean, I should have just picked them out. So now that we're finished with the top players, let's take a tackle at the rest of the field. And, Fred, I'm going to give you the first shot at telling me who do you see coming from the rest of the field, who would be a dark horse, and who is your winning pick?
I have three guys, actually, I want to, just to get a real quick about. Rafa Cabello-Bale has been playing really, really well. He might be the best European coming in right now, other than Rory McIlroy. Patrick Reed, we didn't talk about. I think he has a chance. He's from Augusta State. He's from Georgia. He's accustomed to that area. He's played the course. He's a grinder. He's a guy that could get it done. And also, if there's going to be an amateur to win this thing, I kind of like this Bryson DeChambeau kid. He's been playing a lot of pro tournaments the last 6 months, and he's been playing pretty well. And he's taken this really seriously. He spent some time with Jim Nance, going over old tape, looking at where to hit the ball, what to do. He's got a scientific mind. He's, very numbers-oriented. That would really be something if an amateur would jump up and win the Masters. That would be an absolutely amazing thing. And I look for this kid to be somewhere near the leaderboard come Sunday. So Rafa, Patrick Reed, and Bryson DeChambeau. My winner, Carlos, I can't pick just win. One, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Bubba, Phil, and Rory. If you notice, I put Phil in there.
They can't all win. Pick one guy.
I know, but I can't pick just one guy. You know that. I can't do that.
Oh, man. No way. Okay, Kieran, how about you? What's your thoughts on the rest of the field, dark horses, and your winning pick?
Well, I think dark horses, I have a couple. I think Charles Schwartzel, who could be a guy, the former champion, obviously 5 years ago, had that great finish. He's playing really well. He's won three times around the world since November, including, of course, winning the Valspar Championship a few weeks ago in Florida, his second win in America after a long time. Caveat to his career, he's had a great record in South Africa, hadn't done much elsewhere in terms of wins. Now he's got another win in the U.S. I think he could be a guy that comes through and potentially maybe he's surprised everyone who wins another one. You never know. I think he'll certainly be a factor at some point through the week. I also think Mark Leishman could be an outside guy to do well here. He's played well in the past. He played well when Adam Scott won in 2013. Actually played with him that final day and had to. He's a great amateur when Adam Scott hold the putt in the last, the 18th to get in the playoff. Mark Leishman's there, fist pumping in the air for his compatriot, which I thought was a great image. And Mark Leishman as well actually missed the Masters last year because his wife at the time was critically ill. Thankfully, she's recovered from that, survived. Of course, he contended at the Open Championship last year, lost in that playoff. So he has big game form. I think that Mark Leishman could contend this week as well as a potential outsider. I also like Patrick Reed as well. I like Patrick Reed like Fred does as being a potential outsider as well. Zach Johnson, if the weather becomes more inclement over the weekend with the wind picking up, I think Zach's more of a grinder. I think it will be more about your shotgun and wedge game if the weather gets bad, and I think that might play into his hands like it did when he won here 9 years ago. Obviously, he's playing quite well. Major champion from last year, so he has a lot of big game confidence as well. I think Zach could be a potential two-time champion this week. And also Bryson DeChambeau, I think he's a really intriguing character. Spending time with Jim Nance, I would not recommend to anybody, of course. That's obviously a terrible thing to do. Hello, friends. I know, just a rather odd guy to say the least, I'm afraid to say. Anyway, but even more than that, Bryson's a very intelligent guy, a really obviously unique perspective to the game, both intellectually and also in the way obviously he's set all his clubs, which is obviously unique. But I have to wonder as well, he's played 11 practice rounds before this week. He's been there a lot with members playing rounds there. He's very obsessed with the idea of trying to win the Masters as an amateur, obviously almost fulfilling Bobby Jones' dream, I'd imagine. has a great historical knowledge, but at the same time, I have to wonder, maybe there's just too much going on in his head. Maybe he's thinking too much about it. I think you can almost overthink things here. And maybe that will go against him, but certainly he's a really interesting character, and if he could contend, it would be obviously a fantastic story. So those guys are my outsiders, you know, Schwartzel, you know, Lee Schlesman, Zach Johnson, maybe Patrick Reed, potentially Louis Oosthuizen as well, I like. In terms of an overall winner, you know, I like Fred, all those guys are in the mix, and I like them all for various reasons, but I'm going to stick my neck out and just say, this week, Rory's going to do it. He's going to complete the career Grand Slam, and we're going to talk about him in the future as being, you know, one of the all-time great players, having won all the major championships. You know, I think this could be his time. You know, maybe the other guys have won more events this year. Rory's been kind of inconsistent in and out, but maybe that's the way he's going to come slightly under the radar, if you like, and win this thing. And if he does that, obviously he will achieve history. I would like to see it happen. It's a big story and obviously a big moment to happen. So I'm going to pick Rory to win.
You know, I am mad at Adam Scott for picking Stevie to be his caddy this week, but now I'm mad at you because I heard you talking about Rory McIlroy when we were in the individual, and I would have never expected you to pick him to win. And that's my pick to win. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I was just trying to trick you, Carl, earlier. Just teasing
man,
with you.
I was like celebrating. Yes, he's not going to pick Rory.
They set you right up.
He set me up.
You must realize one thing. I make all this up as I go along. I have no idea what I'm going to say before my mouth. No, Fred said I'm winning. He's right. Even I don't know what I'm going to say. So that's it.
It's the wind. You're winding. I mean, you're windy, so you can change from one moment to the other. I know. That's you.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, I have to say it. I mean, I said it at the end of the year show last year that I expected Rory to complete his Grand Slam career Grand Slam in the Masters, and yes, he's going to do it. I have to stay with him. I think he's just going to channel that anger, and he's just too. He said it that he wants some part of what Chase and Justin did last year. He just wants that so bad. I think he's going to channel it in and he's going to do it. So for the rest of the field, I have to talk about Hideki Matsuyama, of course. I mean, he's won in the Phoenix Open when he outdueled Ricky Fowler. He looked great. That was one of the most entertaining days of the season to date. Augusta National seems to feed his eye too, and he burst into the scene here as a low amateur in 2011, finished fifth last year. I think this is a course, and he's a player that could win here. You have to look out for him. Justin Rose, last year, I thought he just ran into a minor problem called Jordan Spieth, you know, matching the all-time scoring record. Otherwise, he was one of those players that could have won it. He finished a T-second last year. And he's another one of those tee-to-green aces and highest-level ball striker who tends to emerge at the top of the leaderboards and the toughest courses on tour. And the final, this is one. So Justin Rose is another one you would like to see there. I have to agree with you, Charles Schwartzel, the former champion in 2011. He won in Tampa. Very impressively, he flies under the radar, but he remains one of the world-class talents. And his form of late bodes well for his chances at Augusta. We all remember those four birdies in 2011. As for dark horses, I have to go, I would say, one of the players, two young players. I would say Benny Ahn. He's been playing very well, and even though he doesn't have the best of records in the majors, actually it's underwhelming, but he's in late great form. I mean, but there's no way to know how he's going to do here, but I just think he's going to do well. And another one that is tied to him everywhere is Matthew Fitzpatrick. I think he's going to do well. That's a rising star, Matthew. Another one that, you know, he might have an even three-event stretch in Florida swing, but and he got wiped out in the WGC match play, but this is a guy that you have to keep an eye for. And the amateur, of course, Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, he has all this accolades and all this aura on him, and you know, just have to see, at least for sure, he'll be the lowest amateur this weekend. So, guys,
you know, one more thing about Bryson. He's playing with a different set of clubs this week. You know, he's been playing the Edel, E-D-E-L, made those irons for him, the one club-like. And he switched over. Cobra made a set for him. And they've been working on it for some time. They had a bunch of man hours in, and they got a set for him. And so, you know, he's turning pro next week at the Heritage. So Bryson's just he's counting his money. He can't wait till Monday or Tuesday so they can get that check from Cobra.
But the thing is, Fred, if Bryson can somehow win the Masters as an amateur, that check might just be a little bit higher on Monday morning.
Yeah, there you go.
It could be, it could be. Well, let's take our last short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our final pods, which will be giving some thoughts and reflections on the first 3 years of the show and what we expect going forward. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final pods for... Today, as Fred mentioned at the beginning of the year, is the third-year anniversary of our show. 3 years ago, we started this show. We've been tinkering with it. We've been trying to put it up to the best show that we can for you, and we always invite you to let us know what would you like to see in our show. Let us know. Write to us. Tweet to us. Hey, let us know. This is your show. We're here for you. And let's start first with Kieran, our special guest this week and for many weeks. Which are your thoughts about these first 3 years and what do you expect moving forward?
Well, first of all, I'm amazed that Fred has survived all these 3 years. That's quite amazing for a man of his age to make it this far. I've been waiting for the last 3 years to take his place permanently, but it hasn't happened yet. I'm still waiting for it to drop off, but I guess I've got to hang about for a bit longer.
Hang in there. I'm not that far away, Kieran. Hang in there.
I know you've got many years left, my friend, I'm sure. But yeah, you know, on a serious point, it's been fun to be involved with it for these years. My first appearance on the show, I think, was kind of before the Open Championship 3 years ago at Muirfield. So I've been on it for 3 years. I was very nervous when I first did it. I'm still nervous. I'm perhaps more comfortable with it now as time's gone on. I've done different things on the show. I've kind of spoken with interesting folk. James Dodson, the author, was an interesting guy to talk to on here. Matt Janella as well, of course, talking about Scottish golf courses is fascinating. We've had different experiences like that. And actually just talking with you two guys has been fun. You know, I think we've got a good chemistry over these years, a good connection. We've kind of got to know each other over these shows, which is odd, given we've never actually met in person, which is obviously an unusual dynamic to have. I think it's been a very enjoyable thing to do. I always appreciate being asked on, and I always enjoy it. It's entertaining. But at the same time, on a more kind of personal note, and this is something for both of you, particularly Fred, you know, doing this show for the last 3 years and actually being initially involved in eDraft 4 years ago when Fred asked me to do it, you know, that was a big thing for me because that gave me a platform to write regularly and then to do these shows, obviously, on a regular basis as well. And that was a big thing because last year I became a freelance writer where I actually got paid to do what I did and I was able to go to some events and the tour, things I could never really imagine doing 4 or 5 years ago, even less than that, even a year and a half ago. And then this year I became a full-time part of Golfshake, which is one of the biggest golf websites in the UK. And now I'm essentially working as the editor of that website. And that probably would not have been possible had it not been for you guys getting me on eDraft, first of all, and also this show as well. And I want you both to know, and particularly Fred, who, of course, got me involved personally in the first place, know how grateful I am for the opportunity. Even though it wasn't a paid thing at eDraft, it wasn't really a big thing, but for me, it gave me a platform to improve as a writer and to improve broadcasting skills on this. And that led to me indirectly getting that actual proper full-time paid position, being involved in some way in the game that I love. And that's something I could never dream of. It was the dream, and to make it something of a reality, something that I could never really have imagined. And And, you know, I really, really thank you, Fred, for giving me that chance. I never told you this before, but honestly, it means a lot. And I do hold you responsible in many ways for getting me in this position. So I'm really, really grateful for that. And one day I hope to have one of you, if not both of you, at some point over here in this country, and we can have a pint and play a bit of golf and talk about it and meet in person, because I am really, really thankful. I hope you both have a good few years in the show from this point. You improve your listen numbers even more. You have even better guests on. You have even better shows, and you enjoy it. I just keep having fun doing it. And to have a chance to talk about the game is obviously something we all love and enjoy. And to share it with you guys also is fun. I think you two enjoy it, sharing it every week together. And I hope you enjoy that going forward. So, Fred, I am so thankful for the opportunity. It means a lot. It's made a big difference to my life. And I want you to know that. And, Carlos, it's been fun to get to know you on this broadcast in the last 3 years. You know, I enjoy your... You're a great host, a great handle for this thing. You hold it all together. And I enjoy your personality as well. And it's always good fun to talk with you both. So, from a personal point of view, thank you both. And I hope people who do listen to the podcast enjoy it. And hopefully they will do so going forward. For me, it's just, I'm really, really grateful for both of you guys for giving me this chance.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that, Fred.
But I didn't expect that, for sure, yeah.
You're up next, so take it up.
Well, I can't follow that up, Kieran. I really appreciate that. Well said, sir. We just enjoy having you on the show, and we're so happy that I know it's a hardship for you. It's the middle of the night over there. It's tough for a thing for you to do, and we really appreciate having you on. You bring so much insight. Your historical knowledge of the game is always spot on, and we just really enjoy it when you're here. So thank you so much. And from my thoughts, guys, I just really want to thank Carlos also for being my partner in this from the beginning. He makes this whole thing click every week. He does a great job behind the scenes. He's our technical guy, makes sure that everything's on point and does our outline every week. We give him some ideas, and then he makes them work. So, Kieran, like I said, we're just happy that you've been involved with us. We'd love to have you more, but I know it's a hardship for you. So, and then the thing for me that I've been most excited about over the past 3 years is the people that we've talked to and are interviewed over the last 3 years. We've had Lydia Coe on more than once. LPGA's communications director, Craig Kann, is a regular. And even the commissioner, Michael Wan, has been on the show a couple times. Another young lady that will be on the star on the LPGA, Charlie Hall, was an excellent interview. Plus, we've talked to Suzanne Pedersen. We've also talked about the early days of the LPGA with Carol Mann. So both ends of the spectrum there. I think I may have enjoyed talking with her as much as anyone else we've ever had. Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, Tim Fincham, and a host of PGA Tour players have been on the show in the past. We've even had some of golf's leading administrators. I mentioned Fincham earlier, has been on the show. But also Steve Mona and PGA's Susie Whaley was very interesting to talk with. And we've got more of those type people coming also down the road. So I love talking to the golf course designers. We've had Tom Doak on. We just had Mike DeVries on for a second time the other day. I'm supposed to be able to get to talk to Pete Dye this summer, so we should have him on. And we've just got more stuff coming. We're lining it up. I just got a bunch of great interviews from the people at Kiwa Island this week. I had a great interview with Heath Slocum up at Pinehurst last Friday, as we'll play that sometime going forward. So, guys, for me, the last 3 years have just been awesome, and we even have better stuff coming down the road all the time. So thank you so much to both of you.
Well, now it's my turn. I don't know how to
Yeah, beat that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't like to be the first, even though, you know, people say, hey, early bird gets the worm, and that's what Kieran said. Or being the second, I love it, because, you know, it always they say that the second mouse is the one that gets the cheese, and that's what Fred just did. So I don't know what I have left, being third and last, you know. But anyway, I really have to really thank, first of all, Kieran, for all those words as you just said, and we always enjoy your company here and your great knowledge of being here. You've been a great part of this past 3 years. Every time that either Fred or me were not here, you fill in, and you're here also from time to time for the big tournaments and all that, like Fred mentions. We would love for you to be a bigger part, but we know this is a very, very daunting task to ask for the time difference. It's an incredible thing that you guys, some of you know, but we have never seen each other. And we do this every week. And it seems like, to me, it's incredible that we do it like we're doing it right in front in the radio station. That's the great thing about this. And Fred, thanks to you for picking me early to do this show with you every week. I enjoy it. I look forward, even though if I'm not, I mean, those weeks that we take off at the end of the year are still like, oh, tomorrow there's a show. No, we don't have a show. And if I'm not in, I'm looking forward to listening to it afterwards. And it's such a great thing. It's become a part of my everyday life just to be looking forward to that Tuesday. I've done other shows, but in Spanish, so this is the first radio show I do in English, and it's been incredible. Like you mentioned, all those great guests that we've had, enjoy all of them, and having the opportunity to know that they are not saying no to this show, that they could easily do that, but hopefully looking forward, we can have more of them, and a lot of great things I'm sure that we're going to have for you. So it's been 3 years. Seems like it was yesterday that we started, but hopefully it will be many more. And Kieran, let me tell you, I think I'll retire before Fred is out of the show, so wait for me first, okay?
I think you're right, Carl. I think Fred's far too stubborn to actually die. I think that's what it is.
It's the German in me, Kieran. I'm sorry.
So, anyway, I thank you both, and I'll give you both each right now a chance for final words before we go. For Kieran first.
Oh, thank you, Carlos. Actually, you touched on something really interesting there as well, about how we are literally in dramatically different locations, and to have a show where we almost sound like we are in the same room is incredible. And we're also very different people, ages and nationalities and whatever else, and we just have this kind of different background. And to bring such different people together with kind of a collective love of the same subject in golf, and to talk about that and share laughter and jokes and almost like just as if we're just regular guys talking about it, it is in its own way quite fascinating and quite incredible. It is obviously a testament to modern technology and what we can do nowadays, and obviously the skill that you have in putting it together, Carlos. And also, I think as well, the three of us work together really well. We're together. We have a good back and forth, and we enjoy that. And we share knowledge and experiences and jokes and laughter. And that just, I think that's just what it's just fun to do. And that's what it comes down to. We enjoy doing it, and I hope that comes through to people listening to this, that we just enjoy it, and we hope they enjoy it. So I think people, there's far too much misery in the world, and all too much of it, unfortunately, these days. And I think doing this sort of show is an opportunity to kind of celebrate what we actually love about life, what we enjoy about it, which is obviously the game, but also the people within the game. And we are three people who are perhaps the unlikeliest of friends, if you like, but here we are. And isn't that a great thing? I love it, and I hope that continues going forward.
Fred, how about some final words?
Just real quickly, I've always met some of the greatest people on the golf course, when you just go and you get paired up with someone and you meet interesting people, find out what they do, find out about them and all that kind of thing. And that's kind of what this is. And a chapter in my book is going to be that golf has its own international language. And Kieran, you in Scotland, Carlos, you were in Puerto Rico, now you're living in Dallas, from a Hispanic background. And just me from up here in Ohio, that's the golf language. We can all speak it. We all know it, and that's the beauty of it. So that's really all I can say. It just all meshes, and we work well together.
Well, that Back Niners will wrap up our third year anniversary edition of the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com, where we brought you a massive wall-to-wall preview of the 82nd edition of the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. So remember that there is never a boring week in golf. Another exciting weekend is upon us with the Masters. Make sure you don't miss the action. When you least expect it, history can be made and memorable moments are flourished. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to you on the Masters Week. We brought a master, our friend and colleague, European golf guru Kieran Clark. Thank you for being with us once again. So, Kieran, thank you. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at @BagnanReport. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader and Kieran Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.